What's up, everybody? You guys can hear me now, right?
Yep.
All right. I'm professional. Don't worry about it. Welcome to another class in session. So this is the first time we're officially meeting each other, but this is also a way for me to like let you introduce yourself to everyone that's watching and everyone that's here with us right now.
Sure. Awesome. I'm Boy Sichtman from the Netherlands, currently live in Frankfurt. I'm an environment artist currently at Cloud Imperium Games, formerly known as Foundry 42, working on Star Citizen at the moment. So I went to International Game Architecture and Design, which is in the Netherlands, in Breda, did the visual arts course there. Then from there, I went to Elite 3D doing prop art in Valencia in Spain. And then from there, I went to Cloud Imperium Games, which I joined about 3 years ago. So it's a short brief.
Well, thank you for joining us, man. And where in Cloud Imperium? Which studio location?
The Frankfurt in Germany.
Frankfurt. Yeah. How many studios do you guys have around the world?
I think it's about five now. So we have the Frankfurt one in Derby in the UK. And then we have one in Manchester, or next to Manchester in Wilmslow. Then a Texas one and one in LA.
Oh, awesome, man.
Yep.
Well, I mean, like, of course, I came across your work on Art Station, and it's your hard surface master. So have you always been interested in hard surfacing? Have you tried other character modeling? Have you tried other parts of the game dev before settling on hard surface?
So, yeah, I've tried pretty much all of it for a little bit. At school, I was kind of forced to try it, basically. So everything from animation, Houdini, like concept art, painting, life drawing, touch upon everything like a little bit. But it was pretty soon, like after maybe 2 years or after 1 year, that I knew like hard surfaces is my jam. That's the thing I really love doing. I've always been really into like the military. Like my dad's from the military, so I kind of grew up in a military environment, I guess. I think that kind of pushed me into this direction as well, of like guns and vehicles and everything made from metal basically always interested me in some way.
There's obviously a massive knowledge that you have to go with creating a lot of this, because you're kind of deconstructing it first and then recreating in 3D in a lot of ways, and it helps to have some background knowledge. And I think with 3D art, you can really tell if people have the fundamentals when they're creating. Can you comment a bit about that? Like how far do you go with learning how a gun operates before you actually create something from scratch, or actually create something from reference, especially like Star Citizen, which is sci-fi?
Yeah. I think for Star Citizen, we're pretty realistic focused. It's kind of the whole selling point of the project as well. I can't say too much about the project, of course, because I didn't sign any NDA or anything. But I can talk a bit about it. So you always have to find a nice balance between realism and fun. So I mean, we don't go into the nitty-gritty of like the thrusters have all the internals and stuff like that. We don't really do that, but it has to look believable from the outside. And I try to do the same thing with my own projects, where I research enough to make it look like 80% believable, and the 20% I kind of, you know, I allow for some imagination on how it works, maybe more like 30-70. I think that's a value that always come back in a lot of things. But I think it's important to also have fun with it and not get stuck too much on how practical it is. It is important to do research and to at least have people look at your work and have at least some understanding of how it works and what the technology behind it is. I think that always makes it more interesting to look at than something that's purely visual, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
I think when we started to, we have obviously a lot of students here who are somewhat professionals, but also like very green, right? They're very new and they're looking for their first job. And when I started, and probably when you started too, like prop art was a very vacant spot. I mean, it was like the most prominent job that you can get into the industry, right? But like now it's gotten so specialized, unless you're like badass like you, boy. It's very hard to get into prop work as a junior artist, right? Like, have you seen kind of that change in landscape? And what advice would you have for people who are still enjoying environment art enough to want that to be their first job?
So you're saying prop art got more difficult to get into, basically, or...
Prop art got more difficult. It's gotten like more outsourcing, and it's hard to be like a junior prop guy. Yeah, like how I've seen the changes.
I mean, I'm pretty new in the industry myself. I mean, I've only been doing this for 5 years, so I guess for me, maybe I got lucky the way I got hired at Elite 3D, which is it is an outsourced studio, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the path I took, I guess. But I guess the bar has been raised over the past few years, I think, because there's so many resources out there that like everyone can get to a basic level pretty soon, and a basic understanding of how to do it. So you really have to outshine a lot of people in order to get noticed and land that dream job, I guess. I think to do that, I think it comes down to just doing it a lot. Maybe for your first project, don't get stuck too much on the same project. Try to do, for like the first year, maybe try to do like rather more projects than really getting stuck on one single one. And then once you feel like you've got the basics, then just really, really go for those king projects. Like make something that you feel is going to outshine everything, and just ask a lot of people for feedback and make them push you even harder to really get something that stands out from everything. I think that's something that I learned along the way, is don't try to do stuff fast for your portfolio. Just try to really take your time and really push it to that next level, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Actually, that didn't really answer the question in the end, but
it answers it. I mean, like, it is one of those things that I've noticed too, like a lot of... Because even when I started, they were looking at ways to just hire seniors in the office, right? Mm-hmm. And looking at solutions for junior. And I think even now it's starting to become more that way, where, you know, AAA studios are looking more for seniors and trying to outsource like level props and stuff, right? But of course, yours is beyond. You're doing weapons and stuff. Weapons is still very much a thing. Tanks are still very much a thing. Like all jobs besides environment art has kind of been seeing that shift as well. I guess my follow up question is, you know, we have these group of students here, and I'm encouraging to do a group project because everybody was kind of in their own kind of pocket doing their own personal. And it was one of those ideas is like, well, you guys are kind of working individually. Why not do something as a group project? Because then you can achieve something greater. Right. I would love to kind of hear your thoughts about that. Have you ever collaborated while when you're beginning, or you do still collaborate now, or are you still mostly personal? Have you seen kind of the pros and cons of both things?
So in university, I was also, of course, forced to do collab projects. I think it's a really good way to you know, create something together. First of all, you learn how to work together better, which is also important for a job, I think. And also, like you say, you can create something that you would never be able to create yourself, like a massive environment, for example. Like that's just going to take too long if you have to do it by yourself. So you can really focus on creating those, you know, those assets or those props, really pushing them to the level you want them to be. And then you can combine them in the environment and have like a nice video of this, you know, how it all comes together, basically, which you know, that you also, this way you broaden your reach to people. Like people will find your stuff through other people as well, because you make it together, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I love collabs, actually. It's something I want to do more myself as well, now that I've done so many projects by myself lately.
I will say this, like in school, it was a lot easier to kind of get a group together on an individual level. Now you're dealing with like, well, I mean, I guess your kid needs you right now. We can't do anything. As a professional, it's so much harder to get a group together. So that's why I'm trying to get these guys to kind of see this as valuable, to like the group of people like aiming to do something, it's very rare. When life goes on, you're not going to get that much opportunity because people are week two, week three, you know, they're probably seeing it too now that your best friend has an excuse all of a sudden, right? So it's always something coming up with distractions. So I would love to kind of go through some of your work and go through your process, man. If you want to start sharing screen or if I can, whatever works best with you.
Yeah, but I got some stuff open here. So
awesome.
Let's see how this works. I've actually haven't used Zoom before. So
Zoom, you just share screen on top, on the bottom. And if you have like audio, there's a way to connect your audio so that we can hear it too. So yeah.
I don't think I have any audio with this.
Okay.
Screen one. Let's see if I can get Zoom on the right side again. Oh, cool. Yeah, I just did a clean install yesterday of Windows, so it's all fresh. just preparing for the 3090 when I hopefully get it soon. okay, let's see.
You got a hold one? Jeez, man. Those are so hard. Like gold.
I thought so. I thought I did, but now I'm still waiting for like 2 months or something probably before I get it.
All right.
I guess... Should we go about for this one first, maybe? Like the
Let's go whatever speed you want to go. Go for it, man.
Nice. So yeah, this is high poly only. So it's not a fully realized game prop. For my personal projects, I choose to do more concept stuff myself. Since for me, that's kind of my end goal. Where I want to go at some point as well is switch to concept. Just because for me, that's what I feel most fun doing it. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, let's see. I have Fusion here. But yeah, I mean, the process to create a high poly like this is the same as you would for a prop almost, I think. So let's see. Why did I save this?
So Fusion is a very popular hard surfacing program that, you know, I played with a little, but not that much. Can you kind of explain what the advantages over? I assume that you know, worked with Maya and all these other tools as well. What are the advantages of Fusion that you find so relaxing?
I will actually show a few, I guess, since I have it open anyway. So, I mean, the main difference between Fusion, for those who don't know it, the main difference is Fusion is, well, NURBS-based or parametric modeling, basically. So the detail is like never ending. Like it's based on calculations rather than polygons, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's all run by splines. So that not every spline or parametric program can do this, but Fusion in particular has some neat functions that I love about it. So for example, if I have this cube, I don't think I have my hotkeys, unfortunately, but I can manage without, I hope. So for example, you can rotate a face like this and it will keep the tangency on all the faces, right? Like if I rotate this, you can see like these faces, they don't change. Like if this was a polygon and I would rotate this, it would, you know, it would change these. They would rotate the edges here with them, basically. So that's one thing. So say I do this, I can take this face. If I move this face, you can see it. Let's just do it like this so you can see it better. You can see it still keeps the tangency of all the faces that connect to it, which is, for me, that's already amazing. Then say I do a boolean or something here, like I have box and I cut out this box. I have this face, for example. Say I want this to continue. I just delete the face and it does the same thing. Mm-hmm. It continues the tangency all the way out of the model. And then you can do things like, say I have this, I move this to the side here. Let's move it again. If I move this and I do, sorry, not moving. One sec. Let's go here, create pattern. So for example, if I do a pattern, which is basically an array in Maya or Max, I believe, I can do this. For example, if I commit to it, you know, it sees the detail not as it's basically a separate object, and it knows how to cut it in when you array it. And then if I want to delete something here, I can delete this face. Actually, that doesn't work. I can extrude it. Boom, that's gone. I mean, yeah, this it's all these little functions. Like if even this, like I can move this here and you will think now it will break, but it doesn't. If I commit to it, it's just going to cut away nicely and it just knows how to resolve everything. And for me, this, I don't have to think about how to make stuff that much anymore. I can just kind of think of a cool shape and I can model it without having to worry about topology or like edge loops or anything like it, which for me, that just, it's very creative and it just allows me to do stuff a lot faster, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So what are the cons? What are the setbacks that you see in other programs that you wish Fusion had?
There are definitely cons. Yeah, so I guess the main con is if you want to make a low poly from this, you would have to export it either as an OBJ or you go to Moy and you export the topology to like your 3DS software, to your 3D software where you make the low poly, like say Maya or Max. Mm-hmm. And then the topology, you don't have too much control, right? Like I don't decide here how the topology is going to be really. Yeah. You have some sliders on export, for example, that allow you to have some basic controls, but you're always going to have to clean up some bits here and there to get to a nice bakeable low poly, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So that's the main thing. The other thing is doing very compound shapes. Like with SubD, for example, if you want to create a certain shape, you at some point you understand how to work the topology to get some very compound round shapes in some instances. Whereas the whole workflow to get those shapes is very different in Fusion. Like, for example, you want to use forms. This is probably the closest to SubD. So this is, I mean, this is basically SubD. Like it has mm-hmm. creases and you can modify the topology how you want, but it doesn't work as nicely as SubD in any other 3D software. So if for example, if you want to create, let's see if I can find an example on the internet, maybe like AR-15 stock, something. Oh, that's 16, 15. See if I can do this. I mean, this is pretty, like, if as long as it's like made out of primitives, it's doable, but it's more like, I hope I can find a quick example. This is all pretty doable. I guess it's more like cars, for example, like if you mm-hmm. look like a Lamborghini or something. It's like creating these kind of shapes in Fusion, that's going to be very tough. Like you would have to first draw out all the lines and then do like lofts and use all kind of different tools that you usually don't use in 3D software. So it's a whole new learning curve that you have to go through. Whereas it would probably be faster even to do it in 3ds Max, even if you're very comfortable with the tools.
So what is the, I'm assuming there's a beveling freebie at the end of this where you want to turn that object into not sharp. It takes care of that.
Yeah. So fillets basically like this.
I see.
You would have to go in manually and just fillet everything. That's if you want the most control.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, like this. And then after this, now it's going to recognize the edge loop here. So if I do a fillet now, there you go. And that's basically how you go.
I'm sorry, nice shading too. You're convincing me, man. Oh my God. Yeah.
It's super fun to use and it's free for students, I think. Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to weapon modeling or vehicle modeling, anything hard surface, it seems like within a portfolio, especially for a student, as long as you can show at least one piece that you know the full process of baking and texturing, the rest of it could be just conceptual. Is that true? Do you find that if you got to have more of a balance between the two for getting a job? Because I think everybody usually just gets impressed with hard surfacing where they don't need to really, they don't care about the end process as much. Is that true? I would love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think maybe one project maybe is, I would go for maybe two or three at least, I think myself, just to be sure, you know, like I would be okay if I see a project of someone with like just one like fully worked out environment or a bunch of assets in one post, for example, that I can see, okay, you understand the pipeline, I would be okay with it. But I think maybe there's still some studios where where they'd rather go with someone who has like two or three of those.
Yeah.
But I definitely agree that, you know, if you can show that you can do it, then after that, I like to see more, like I appreciate it more if people show that they understand a bit of design and concepting as well. Because I think that's a very valuable skill as either a pop artist or environment artist as well to have. Because often you're going to end up with concepts that are very rough or very, like you only have one side of a concept or it's very quickly drawn. And having the ability then to quickly, you know, design out the parts that are missing or to fill in the gaps, basically, that's a very good skill to have. And that's going to really help you a lot in the industry.
So when you do your concept stage, which is usually Fusion, and you bring it to a 3D package to retopologize it, is it usually Maya Max, I'm assuming?
It depends on the project. So let's see. So for this one, I actually didn't do a low poly at all. This is just the high poly and Octane render. But
So you're used to Octane. I'm assuming you played with Keyshot. And I'm assuming Octane just has more control that you can just push it a little further, right? Is that the reasoning?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's yeah, and like the way you build shaders and stuff in Octane. In general, I just like the end result in Octane more. I can't really pinpoint it. I think it's the shading or the way it renders or calculates lighting or this and the materials and stuff. I just like it a bit more in Octane myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And usually you have like a whole setup, like a scene setup already, and you just drop your property, you rebuild everything for that.
It's always from scratch. Since I always like to for every shot I do, like here for every shot, I copy over the materials from scene to scene, but then I delete everything except the materials. And then I start redo the lighting completely to highlight all the top corners, bottom corners, like get the rim lights, get the, like the key lights and everything. Probably do like a couple of renders that I then overlay on top of each other and like paint out little highlights here and there, or mask them out. That's basically how I redo every render that you see here. I can show the Photoshop file maybe if you want.
Yeah, show me the Photoshop. Oh my God. Yeah, people, kids these days, it's getting to a point where I say Photoshop, they say what? Like they don't use it much for anything anymore. It's always Substance all the way. It's like, guys, yeah. Learn how to use texturing from the basics first too.
Yeah.
But yeah, let me ask you this. So I see a lot of students, even professionals, they spend like a good amount making sure their model, their art asset or whatever, their scene looks fantastic, but then they fall apart in presentation. Like they don't know how to take screenshots. They don't know how to present it.
Yeah.
What advice do you have when we're at the stage of the finishing line, which people say is the last 10%, but I say it's like 90% of the whole thing, just presentation. What do you think about that?
I agree. I think presentation is where you can really make your model shine, and you can push it so much further than what you always think before you start it. Like you can probably gain a lot of, like maybe you can make it look 50% better if you do the presentation right, basically, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I would really take your time and just don't rush it. Because I know it's fun, you know, you're done, you want to post it, you want to present it and post it and just show it to the world, basically. But yeah, don't just take your time and sleep a night over it and then look at it next day. And because I made that mistake a few times where I'm like, oh, finally, I'm done. Let's show it. And I post it. And the next day I look at it, I'm like, oh, I hate it. Yeah, like, why did I post this?
Yeah. Do you often have like a circle that you kind of throw it around before you publicly post it, or do you usually just take a walk away from it before, like self-critique basically, like what is your process before you share it?
It's a bit of both. So I always try to sleep a night basically before I really do it, like look at it the next day, even though it's finished. But also I'm in a couple of Discords with some friends where we always just throw around our work and get, nice. You know, like we do some screen share and and feedback each other, which really helps a lot.
That's a clever way. Yeah, I haven't really thought of, you know, we have obviously a Discord with all the students doing that, but on a professional level, as just friends, never even thought about that. I guess once I leave work, I don't want to talk to them anymore. But it's very clever to kind of have that circle to kind of push each other, even if you're not working on a game, right? Working on a game is obvious, but like personal project, it seems like a very handy thing to do for Discord. Is that something you guys discovered, or you guys always had that idea?
I think we've always done it either through Facebook before or through what else did we have? I think, Google Hangouts also. We always have Hangouts active where we just jump in and just have a chat, play games, do art,
nice.
Stuff like that, you know? And that's, I think I learned most, like nowadays I learn most of my new skills I learn most from those Hangouts where we just feedback each other and give each other tips and share tips and tricks and stuff.
That's smart, man. That's clever. Because I think once you become a professional, like what we're beginning to talk about was you kind of lose touch with each other. You don't do group projects as much. And it becomes a very natural thing to go to work and then go home and sometimes keep it separate, right? But that connection is pretty important to kind of be motivated. Nice.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, I mean... kind of depends, right? Like it really depends on the person. Like for some people it's more like a 9-to-5 job, like they're done with it and they just relax the rest of the night or the weekend and don't really think about art that much, which I think is fine. It's perfectly viable, but yeah, for me I like it too much. I can't let it go in the weekends or even after work. It's the thing I like doing, so I just push it whenever I can, I guess.
Well, expand on that a bit, because I think these students can learn a lot from your process to motivate and push and keep the focus, because I'm sure you have like down moments where you just want to relax, right? When you have a personal deadline that feels sacred, but not really, like how do you push yourself to continue to finish, you know, to have the same attitude as when you started?
So it's kind of an ego thing, I guess, as well. Like whenever I'm not doing something in my spare time for too long, I feel bad, and I just like ah, oh, damn, I haven't done any personal artwork for like a week now. Like what am I doing? I want to get better. So then I just start doing it, basically, but not always. Like say it's very busy at work or I'm doing some overtime or it's a stressful period, then I definitely don't try to do this, which is something I had to kind of learn the hard way. Like I burned myself out a little bit, I think like 3 years ago, just working too much, even though like work was stressful and I was still doing personal projects each night until like maybe 3 a.m. and then I wake up, go to work, and repeat. And at some point I just broke, like my blood pressure wouldn't come down and I had to, you know, I had to just don't do art for like a good 3 months, like not even work. I took off like that's between my previous job and this job. I just took a break because I was driving myself crazy doing too much art. So I think it's important to know when you go too far, like when the stress gets too much, identify it and just take a step back and chill. I think that's probably the best advice I can give, because burnouts are the worst. Try to avoid them at all costs. Besides that, it's the main reason I do it, or I do it the way I do it, is I think one, because I have friends around me that do it, so we always push each other to keep working and keep getting better.
Friendly competition.
It sounds weird, but it's a real thing. The second reason is just, I mean, if I don't, I know these projects take a long time in my spare time, and every day I'm not working on it is not a day that I'm not going to be able to release it and start something new. So that's how I kind of push myself to do them. And yeah,
that's great.
Not feel bad about myself, I guess.
Yeah. I think that's, it's one of those things I think developers and students you need to go through to kind of understand what your limitations are. You have to kind of, you know, push the limits on burnout, know what that feels like, and of course comfort, right? I think like the great artists are the one that kind of lives between comfort and pushing the limit. And like Boyer, man, like your work is so awesome, dude. And it encompasses pretty much everything. Lighting, composition, conceptual design. I mean, that's basically future-proofing your career in a lot of these studios, because not a lot of people can do that. But yeah, let's check out this filter. You're cheating here. Let's see this.
I cheat a lot. this isn't the worst one. I have another one like where you see the first render and it really looks like shit. Sorry, I don't know if I can say that. But
no, you can say it.
Nice. Yeah. that's the issue. Like I sometimes don't know how to say something in a nice way. I don't know the bad words. I really push it in during the post-processing. So if I turn off all these layers, here's the first render. And okay. I mean, you can see it. It's detailed, but it reads very flat. And I don't know, there's like a lot of interesting bits missing. So first thing I do is just some levels. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Then is Z depth pass on tops to get some fog, you know, to separate the foreground from the background with some levels to really make sure that the foreground is still nicely saturated. Well, the back is a bit desaturated.
Nice.
Then I push the saturation a bit, like make it a bit more warm. Then I just like, it's super dirty, but I thought like the spaceship here blends too much with the background, for example. So I just mask it out, make it a bit darker, even though it's not that physically accurate in the big picture, you won't notice it. And it's just going to pop it out a little bit more. Fun fact is this spaceship is made from this guy. I just took some chunks and I dash it together to make the spaceship really, really fast. let's see. What do we have here? Like, I'm not even sure what I did here. It was probably very late and I was just trying stuff that I thought was amazing, but didn't work at all. some bloom I just paint on top. It's just like grab some values and with the soft brush, just paint some extra bloom for that whoa effect.
So obviously as you're going through these layers, there's a lot of fundamental knowledge with color theory, composition. Like, is this something that you just picked up intuitively, books that you can you read, or resources that you can use that you can share to kind of help students understand what you're doing? Because when people look at this, they were fine with the first image, but then you know that you have to get the foreground separate from the background compositionally, color wise. You want the lighting come from the tunnel and then warm to cool. You know, I mean, these are type of theories that I think a lot of students ignored when they went to school and then realized, holy crap, I should have paid attention because this is very important later in my career.
Yeah, it's actually, I didn't read too many books about this stuff, weirdly enough. I think it mainly just came with doing it and getting feedback from people who know this stuff. I think that's probably what would help me the most is, I just hang out with these people, with people I know are really good. It sounds a bit weird, right? But there's this saying that surround yourself with the best to become the best. It sounds very cheesy, but I do believe in it.
Yeah. I think it's, they also say like, you become the average of your five closest people. It's like, it's another way to say it too. Yeah. Cool. It's very true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's basically how I learned most of this, is just doing it a lot, getting feedback, and then using that feedback for the next project, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And even like, I forget this stuff. Every new project I do, I forget this stuff, and someone has to remind me, like, dude, it looks super flat. Like, you need to add some Z depth. And like, every project, I forget it less, basically. Like, I remember more, if that makes sense. But it's not like you do this once and you know it all for the next project. Like, you always have to, in your head, repeat it to yourself and take a step back, like write it down. I don't write stuff down enough. Like it's such a good tool to, I mean, it's obvious, but it's such a good tool to remember stuff. Like you always get feedback or you hear tips and tricks and you're like, oh, nice. Awesome. Thanks so much. I'm going to use this for the next time. And then I don't write it down, for example. And like subconsciously forget about it, I guess. And then they remind you the next time. And
yeah, there is something about that, like the tangibility of writing something down. The last time I wrote something down was filling out the ballot and for voting. And it was like months before I was writing. It's weird. But like the notebook on the side does kind of like, I feel, capture your thoughts better than typing it on a computer. I don't know what it is. And there probably are studies about it, but I've noticed it myself. Yeah, when I do write things down, it seems to feel like I'm talking to myself more than typing in a computer for some reason, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I think also, not only with remembering stuff, but also if I have a day where I really don't want to work, like I feel like not working at all or something. What I found out, what works really well for me is I just write down some small things I want to hit those days. Like I want to model the engine, or I want to, you know, create a new panel material. I want to do this little front bit here, put some antennas there and stuff like that. As soon as I write those down and I start doing one of them, I immediately get into the flow and I just do more that day than I would have done on a normal day, basically. Mm-hmm. It's super weird how that works.
Yeah. So like, let's see, I would love to kind of hear you expand on that, getting into the flow, which seems to be like getting the engine started for all artists. It's like, if you don't get that, you just get nothing done. And it usually feels like the first 5 minutes is the most important to get the next 2-3 hours. Was there a process for you to discover that? Did it take a while for you to like understand that, or like how were ways where it just really made you stuck before you started, you know, getting into this rhythm?
It really depends on the task. To start with, like if, for example, if with some tasks, I always get into the flow, and because usually with fun tasks, I guess it's like, that's when it's really easy to get into the flow and just go. But the issue that I have mostly is with, if there's a big body of work in front of you, that you need to hit, it's very hard to break it down in your mind. And whenever you don't break it down in your mind, it's really hard to start it, basically. So that's when the writing down really helped me to start always. And other than that, I personally never had much issues to get into the flow. Mm-hmm. It's just basically
it's a military background.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I think, the main thing is just for me is put on some music, you know, like hype yourself up, some sci-fi music or whatever, for me, it's techno that hypes me up for some reason. Mm-hmm. I always just put on some techno and then I get into the mood, like, all right, let's do this. Then I just open the thing on my screen and I just start going at it, basically, with the easy stuff. But
this question is very specific. Is it usually the same playlist? Like it's a trick that you get yourself into it, or is it like you play around with different playlists every time, or for music?
It fluctuates. Mm-hmm. Like I do have this in the zone list on YouTube, which is like this whole collection of music that I expand on every once in a while. To get into the zone, basically. Actually, I forgot about it, but that playlist is literally called In the Zone. It's just like my top playlist. I always click and go at it.
I'm going to ask you for that link. Maybe we can, the students here can pump out some good work like yours. Just getting in the zone. Yeah, of course.
And I mean, but sometimes I did notice, like, if the music is too out there, like if it's too much melody, too much vocals, it's distracting. Like I prefer when it's a bit more repetitive. It really helps. Mm-hmm. Like it should be more in the back of your mind. It shouldn't be too noticeable while you're working. Mm-hmm. But that's also it changes per person, I guess. What cool. You like or not.
Do you ever adjust music to the theme of your project piece that you're making, or it's always techno, high beat, or anything?
I need
like listening to a bunch of westerns.
Work for this.
If you're
see, maybe I can
cowboys.
Remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think actually I sometimes do adjust it. Like when I do an environment, I tend to listen to more epic music, you know, like more movie music or game music. Whereas I just do a concept like a weapon like this, it's more just techno music. It doesn't really matter what music.
Nice.
But yeah, it helps me to get, like, for environments, it helps me to get into the right mindset, I think, or the right frame of mind, I think is what you call it.
Nice. A big piece like this, and of course you have a full-time gig and you have a life and everything. How long does this usually take from concept, from an idea to finish, off and on?
So you mean this one, the Star Citizen, for example?
Yeah. Well, your other personal, I know this is like a team effort, but let's go to your personal or the last one that you did. Like, usually how long that takes. One. Yeah.
If I don't count the textures for this one, I think if you would count it full time, it would have been like maybe a week.
Oh, you're freaking fast. Jesus. That's off hours too. Textures. Yeah. Then without textures. Yeah. Just modeling, kit bashing. By now you probably have quite a library too, right? That helps.
Not as much as I'd like, but I do have some. Yeah. I think it's like a week. I mean, the geometry is super simple for this stuff. It's a shame I cannot open it. Actually, I can probably show the wireframe here a little bit, or this one.
I would love to kind of ask you about that too as you're opening it. So when I was working, I would meet these, you know, seniors that would have, you know, a library full of their past stuff. And so they would be ready to whip up a new airport or airline within 3 days. And it's like the magic guy that can do these things. So like, how important is that, you think, as an environment art, to always keep your old work just in case, you know, you need to kit bash or whip something up? Or do you prefer to always start from concept and just go with it? Like, how important is that, or not important at all?
I think it can help. Like, I mean, in a professional setting, in a studio, you do that anyway. Like, you're kind of forced to always keep your source files and keep your stuff, of course. But for personal work, I mean, it's kind of a tough one. It probably depends per person. I think reusing props and stuff is good to keep them. But what I found myself is, you're going to get better along the way, and you probably don't want to reuse your old props in your work anymore because you think you can do it better now. So, I mean, it's good to keep them. I think stuff like textures, definitely keep them, because it's going to help you a lot to have them. But like fully baked props or stuff like that, the chances of you want to reusing it, I think is a lot smaller than something like a texture, at least in my experience.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. But I mean, anyway, always keep your source files and stuff backed up. I think that's an important thing to do either way. Yeah.
Do you find yourself ever improving an old project, or you always look ahead for new ideas?
I think I always look ahead. I would like to improve them, but then I also think to myself, like, I already made it. I want to do something completely new and fresh.
Cool. So this render right here is from Octane, right? It's have you ever transferred any of this on your personal, or is it just too much work to kind of put it into Unity, Unreal, or any of that?
I've never done it with like a high poly like this. I think since I'm doing so much baking and like, you know, game ready workflow stuff for work. I don't do it for my personal projects. I don't know. Yeah, I want to push my concepting.
Yeah.
I got lazy, I guess, over time.
It's a lot of the baking, the texturing, just making it a full game res is annoying. It
takes a long time. Yeah.
It takes a long time, yeah.
Let's see, I'll also open this one. So this is the previous one I did. I can open it here already. This one, Gate 05. I'm the worst with names. I always just do the most generic name you can think of.
So do you brainstorm on Pinterest images, or just have a vague thought and you just put shapes together within the 3D package? Like, what's your process getting a concept going?
So I always have a goal in mind with my project. Like, I want to practice something to start with. So in this case, I knew I wanted to try a new workflow where I saw this guy using tessellation in Octane, which is super powerful to basically resolve a lot of detail. So all this, let's see if it's open here. Yeah. So all of this paneling and stuff is not modeled. It's basically like the model is like this. Let's see if I can draw over it. Let's put it to red. So basically the topology of this is pretty much like this, right? It's super simple, like a wireframe like this. Even this here is all just coming from the tessellation. So that I always know beforehand I want to push something or I want to try something new. And in this case, that was using tessellation to resolve as many details as I can for me. So I don't have to think about filling in all the detail. It's all just like throwing on the texture and that's it.
Nice.
So that's the first thing. Then as far as how the environment is going to look, sometimes I do some small thumbnails in Photoshop, just some quick gray value thumbnails to see some, like, to get potential ideas and take it from there in either Fusion or Max in this case. That's really, I always, when I have like a very concrete idea in my head and I start to make it in 3D, it always ends up being something different, which is not necessarily a good thing. It's actually a bad thing, I think. But but yeah, it's something that I want to improve as well, is actually being able to make the thing I have in my head from the start.
As long as you don't share your concept with anybody else, the end result looks good and everyone's going to fault you for it. They're like, yeah, that's what it's supposed to look like. Yeah, it's part of the process. The one thing I do admire with a lot of, you know, concepting and pre-render, and I think a lot of people... I think students nowadays are leaning, because Unreal's free, Unity free, they go there first and they skip this whole pre-rendering process. I think they skip a lot on what you're doing right now, like the whole workflow in a quicker time, and the value of cheating, right? I think a game developer is all about cheating, right? And shortcuts. Yeah. And when I see a student do a full environment, fully baked, like even go as far as like hard servicing every little, you know, nook and cranny of a model, I feel like they're wasting a lot of time and not thinking about what a game developer is, which is, you know, the shortest shortcut that they can take to complete a project. Because we're all about optimizing. We're all about taking, you know, what we're used to seeing in movies and translating that into a system and make it run. I think the pre-rendering workflow that you're showing us here, with you know, the post-processing especially, helps kind of think this way, so that when they need to do a whip out a building really fast with some tessellation, you know, because a lot of the game techniques now are borrowing from, you know, movie industry. I think Substance finally had, you can paint like 42 tileable textures or something like that. They finally have like multiple UV texturing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a movie thing. So we're borrowing from them.
Yeah. I think that's actually a very good point, is people in general overscope a lot for personal projects.
Yeah.
Where like for an environment, if we're looking for people to hire, we mostly, like, if we can see, like, it kind of goes back to the first point, is like when we can see that someone can take an asset from ID to baked asset, we trust them, they can do it on every asset basically. And it's the same with an environment. If we can see from a nice image that you can dress an environment and understand lighting and optimization a little bit, even optimization, it's like optimization is something you will learn in the studio as well. But if you understand lighting and how to dress a corner of a room, that's and if you make that corner look super awesome, that has more value, I think, than doing a complete environment that took you like three times the amount of time and probably looks less good than that one corner, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, understand your limits.
Yeah.
So let me ask you that. Do you ever time box do you become, because these students right now are working on a group project. They do have a deadline, which I think helps a lot with any creative endeavors. How serious are you with personal deadlines? Do you cut off? Do you extend a bit if you need a little more work? Like how much of that is part of your creations?
I do set deadlines because deadlines is really what pushed me to work in the first place often. If I can get myself to work and I set a deadline, that's when I will, you know, get to work. The same as with writing stuff down, I guess, which is also a deadline because I write stuff down for the day. Like I want to hit these points for this day. And that's when you get productive. So I do it as well, but I also don't think you should, this is kind of counterproductive what I say now, but don't stick to those deadlines too much. Like it's fine to go over them, but at least set them for yourself because it's more a tool. It's not a necessity, I guess. Don't kill yourself over a deadline, basically.
No, don't be whipping yourself if you miss a day or two.
Yeah.
No punishing. Cool. Well, we're about like 14 minutes away, and I at this point I kind of like to open the floor for the students to ask you questions directly, for whatever they want, whatever thoughts, anything you guys want to share, but don't embarrass me, guys. So go ahead, feel free, ask any questions you have. You know, Boy is here, you know, he's awesome, and I take advantage of it, guys.
Cool.
I have a question. So when you design like a concept or a composition, you know, do you start with like something rough and then focus on like the camera angle or focus on like the main object of the character and then go to the background, or you start with a background and then work on the focal point back in, like, what's your process?
Let's see. So for example, for, let's do this one. I think it's a bit of both. I think in this case, for example, cause there's not, I mean, the focal point is the entrance with the two ships, for example. So in this case, I always choose my camera angle as soon as I can. That's the first thing I do. Because then I design the environment around my camera angle. So that means I can cheat a lot, right? And save a lot of time, like designing stuff that only designing the stuff that matters. So that's the camera angle is usually the first thing I decide on, together with like the super rough blockout. Like all the stuff is going to be cubes in the start, and I have two floating cubes here that represent the ships. Together with that, I decide the angle, and then from there I continue. Like the background, this thing on the left, for example, that came in way later, just because I felt like, okay, I'm missing a background element, so I should add something there. So it basically, it's a bit of both. I go from the back to the front to the back, deciding what I put where, but getting the camera angle, I think, is the most important thing almost. To decide soon on if you want to finish it fast. that's pretty much it. I hope that kind of makes sense. It depends per project though. Like for example, with the gun, this whole environment I created after I created the gun. Like I first made the gun, and then I was like, let's look at cool ways on how I can present this. Then I just was like, okay, maybe I could do some sort of painting room. And then I just, then again, I decide the angle, and then I model the room around that angle, in the same way I do it for environments, I guess. In the meanwhile, I will also show this. This is like the latest thing I'm currently working on. Little spaceship based on a horseshoe crab.
Looks awesome, man. Who else had a question? Start popcorn picking. All right, John.
Wondering if you, when you start to work on a prop, if you have a clear plan of the workflow that you're gonna go through, or if you just decide along the way. Because I find myself maybe going another route midway in the process sometimes when I make a prop. That might be because I'm inexperienced, but.
Mm-hmm. So in a studio, it's pretty much always the same workflow, because you have set tools to do it. It's like, okay, you either use Substance Painter or you use Quixel, or it's like you either use Max or Maya in that sense. So in the studio, it's always the same workflow. But for my personal projects, I guess I decide on the workflow before I make it, because I want my workflow to be the personal project, if that makes sense. Like, I always want to learn something new during a project. So that's why beforehand I decide on how I'm going to do it. Though, you know, it's true that sometimes you find out about something while making it, and then it's that's also successful, and then it's totally fine to switch, I think. I think I've also done that on occasions. Like, you either find out about the tool that you didn't know existed before, and you're like, oh, this could totally help me out in this circumstance, then totally go for it.
And also, how much time do you have for example, a gun while working on a game? How long it is, or when's the deadline from start to finish?
I think it depends. Well, it depends a lot per project. Like, I don't know if I can share the times for Star Citizen, for example. Like, I guess it doesn't matter. But it's shorter than, for example, Guns for Call of Duty. Like, I haven't done Guns myself. Or Star Citizen, for example, which is custom normal based, it's a lot faster than, say, a fully baked, unique, high poly that's all like nitty gritty textured for Call of Duty. That's going to take a lot longer, of course. That's more in the month compared to like a week or 2 weeks for this project. And then for myself, I take way too long for guns because I'm not a concept artist. Like, I'm a wannabe concept artist, right? So I'm not as fast as most people who do this as a full profession, which is something that I'm working. Like, maybe a month to get the whole thing. Well, not a month. It's hard to say because it's always working during the night or in the weekends only. So it's somewhere between 2 weeks and a month, I would say, which is too long for a concept.
All right. You guys have any last question before I kick in here?
So, if you are doing a style or just like any object you're not familiar with, like, how many references do you usually look up to, like a look and feel of like what you try to go for?
I don't have my ref sheet here. That's too bad. But for example, for this guy, I never did like a proper spaceship before or anything like this. Like, I did the Kitbash one that you saw before, but a lot of reference. Like, I don't think there's a thing as enough reference. So I think for this, I currently have like 50 images in my ref folder, or maybe more, all like organized in PureRef by, like, for example, I would have like 10 different engines to help me with designing the engine when I get to it. Then I have like maybe 20 images of like aircraft paneling and like little radars and antennas on aircrafts to help me with this stuff and with how I'm going to do the basic body. So the more reference, the better, really. There's just go nuts.
Good to know.
All right. So I have one last question and I'm going to say goodbye to everyone. But generally, you being in the industry, these a lot of students, what advice would you give them if they're looking to follow in your footsteps to get into a entry level junior artist position? Like, what should they be working on? What should they be focusing on? And how can they defer from, you know, the whole art station? Like, what would make them feel and stand out, basically, for a job position?
I guess there's a couple of things that I can recommend. I think the first one is ask a lot of people for feedback. Like, just hit up people in the industry. Me and my colleagues were always happy to provide feedback if you want. So always feel free to just send me a message on Facebook or ArtStation or whatever. And I'll do my best to get back to you as soon as I can with some feedback. And that goes for a lot of people in the industry. Like, it's always fun to help someone or to feedback someone, because you'll get better from the feedback, but also we get better from the feedback, because we also learn from feedbacking, if that makes sense. And the other one is, like, pick a project that's unique, I guess. Like, if you want to stand out, that there's a lot of AK-47s. There's nothing wrong with the AK-47, but there's a million AK-47s on ArtStation, right? Like, you would have to make a very good AK-47 to stand out, if that makes sense. So I would rather pick a unique concept or a unique weapon, something that hasn't been done before or that aren't that many of on ArtStation, and push that a lot. That's going to stand out a lot more than you know, another fire barrel or another wooden crate, if that makes sense. Then let's see if there's anything else. Yeah, just okay, this is contradictory, but just work a lot, like spend a lot of time on it, because the only way to get good is spend a lot of time doing it, basically. Like, my first 3 years, I would almost say maybe I worked too much, but just you're not going to get good if you only spend like an hour a week, right? Like, you're going to need to spend a bit more time than that to compete with all the other people who are trying to do the same thing as you, with the thousands and thousands of other starters, basically.
I think that's enough. Well, I mean, like, guys, make sure you delete your wooden barrels and crates. We don't want to see any of that.
There's nothing wrong with it. It's fine to have them, but don't make them the main focus, I guess.
Yeah, make it the background. Put it in the way, way, way back of your environment. But I want to thank you, boy, and I definitely will follow you, follow up with you after this to talk about other things. But, like, I want to thank you especially for you coming on and talking with this group of students. You definitely inspired and motivated everyone and make us feel lazy, which means you're an awesome guest. That's the whole point. It's like, pandemic, if anything, have probably pushed you even further, right? to make more projects. I mean, how are you dealing with that? First point of note.
How I'm dealing with it. For me, not that much changed, I guess, for me, because I always was inside a lot doing this stuff. But I'm just trying to be to force myself to go outside now and just go for a walk and stuff, because beforehand, you know, you do that stuff with colleagues and friends, whereas now that's a bit impossible. And I think it's important to, you know, to keep working out and go to the gym and stuff. So I just have to find different ways now to do that, because the gym is closed, for example. But yeah, I always feel like whenever I go to the gym or something, or I go bouldering, or I go for a run outside, as soon as I get back home, I'm always super hyped to work on my projects again. So I think doing that is also really important, actually. I didn't speak about that yet, but working out and being healthy is probably one of the most important things to stay productive. As soon as I start working too much, I notice that my productivity actually goes down, even though I work more.
Work out for a game dev? What? What are you saying? Get better chairs is what I say. Get a secret lab. Sit longer. Sit longer. Don't get up. Yeah. I want to thank you, as always, for coming on. And I'm going to link all your stuff to these guys so they know where to find you. And probably invite you in their Discord channel so that you can take a peek if you have the availability. It seems like Discord is the most convenient things ever. But I want to thank you again for showing us your work, man, walking us through your process and reminding me that I'm missing out on Fusion. Every time I look at that, I'm like, all right, I'm going to start learning this. And then it's like, well, there's a whole different way of thinking every time you learn a new program. You got to model differently. It's like, all right, maybe I'm not ready for that yet. But you're convincing me more that, you know, hard surface, and if you take it seriously, it seems to be Fusion. I see it a lot now. Yeah, it looks super fun.
Nice. Well, thanks for having me, man.
Of course.
That was super cool. First time I did something like this. So it's also a cool experience.
You're a natural, man. Well, thanks for coming on, talking to the students, getting them inspired.
But yeah, nice. Awesome.
Of course.
And good luck, everyone, with the projects. And feel free to send me anything. Like, I'll help out if I can.
Yeah, awesome. We'll take you up on that. We'll send you like a level full of barrels and crates. And it's like, hey, we listened. Yeah. So, thank you, man. Thanks a lot, dude. We'll keep in touch. We'll be talking more. All right.
See ya.
See you, man. All right, guys. That's it. I'll prep this video up. I might make this public because there's so much good information on YouTube, but I'll break it up in our special apprentice only way, right? So along with the project, I have to go soon, but hopefully you guys, if you guys forgotten what I said at the beginning, you know, I think keeping it simple compositionally, just focus. I think it is very compelling. The radio and the diner is very compelling. Out of all the cuts you guys made, there's something there. Just focus on the sound the radio makes, the setting of the diner, changing it. Like, you basically, to do it right, you basically would have two diners, right? In various stages, you would have the diner super clean and diner super dirty, right? And then you can post-process or Premiere cut it to interlace and blend in and out, right? Like flashes or something or whatever. But from what I've seen from those two cuts, it seems like you guys are leaning on that. Let's do that cut, right? So let's take what I said, add whatever else you want, but let's just do a simple pan out. You know, the sign of Silent Hill can be at the very end, or glimpses of Silent Hill, you know, those flashbacks can be when the diner is being panned out, right? So let's focus on that for the next week. I don't think we're ready to fully go into Unreal yet. Let's get that cut going. You can use Unreal for some of the footage, of course, to help with the trailer so you don't have to do Photoshop bashing as much. You guys have a diner, right? Just use a diner with a camera to interlace that cut. Just export it, right? At this point, you can use what you have. You know, it'll be better than just using a picture. So that's my suggestion. Thank you, guys. Hopefully that you guys find that enjoyable. Boy, definitely had a lot of suggestion when it comes to personal projects. You know, people were dropping like flies at the beginning. But look, you guys have a solid group here. You know, four or five people dedicated and committed to kind of help out. You know, Michael is kind of, you know, creeping in the background, but I'm sure if he showed up, you know, there's some interest if you guys give him the right stuff to do. So keep it going. Focus on that cut. Let's get that looking cut going. And play around with the sound. So the next week, play around with the sound. I think that's enough to do.